Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Today on Truth and Movies, Donna Tartt's bestseller makes it to the big screen with the help of a star-studded cast in The Goldfinch.
I don't need to tell you about loss.
We're going from Lincolnshire to London to Lagos in the British coming-of-age drama The Last Tree.
What would you want from me?
I'm always a tough guy.
And in Film Club, Nicole Kidman thinks her man's a kid in Jonathan Glazer's 2004 gem Birth.
He said, "It's me, Sean. What am I supposed to think?"
All coming up in Truth and Movies, a Little White Lies podcast. Hello there, movie truthers. Welcome back to Truth and Movies. It's Michael Leader here in the host chair, as always, sitting across this week from Sophie Monks-Kaufman.
Hello.
Hi, Sophie. Welcome. And we're welcoming a new guest this week. We have Rogan Graham. Rogan, welcome to the show.
Hiya.
So, for the listeners' benefit, who are you? What do you do?
I just graduated uni and I'm a freelance film writer at the moment.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Could we have read any of your work recently?
Yes. I reviewed Phoenix for Little White Lies in the latest issue, the Judy Garland issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I contributed to the Souvenir issue as well. The list of 100 best British indie
which
films.
Which blurbs do you write in that?
Pressure, Ray and Liz, and Hunger. Uh-huh. Stephen Queen film, yeah.
Can I congratulate you on graduating and like?
Thank you very much.
Please, I wish you all the luck in this cold hard world.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah.
Thank you. Now that we've got niceties out of the way, we should get to the film criticism. And we're going to start with a film that's already had its fair share of a critical kicking on an international stage. We're going to start with the adaptation of The Goldfinch. Goldfinch is the film adaptation of Donna Tartt's best-selling novel, which won the 2014 Pulitzer Prize for Fiction. Theo Decker was 13 years old when his mother was killed in a bombing at the Metropolitan Museum of Art. The tragedy changes the course of his life, sending him into a stirring odyssey of grief and guilt, reinvention and redemption, and even love. Through it all, he holds on to one tangible piece of hope from that terrible day, a painting of a tiny bird chained to its perch, the goldfinch.
Mom, I've got a guest for you.
Now, you must tell me, what have you been doing with your life?
Dealing antiques.
Antiques. When you were a child, I used to catch you studying my paintings. You'd always go straight to the very best ones, the Peel, the Lane, the Copley. I used to think, a kindred spirit.
Mrs. Barber, I am so sorry.
I don't need to tell you about loss.
A clip from The Goldfinch there. So, Sophie, this is adapted from a doorstop of a novel that I think many people might have bought and then not read. How does the film pan out?
I mean, pan is the operative word when talking about The Goldfinch. And I will say that, as I said to you earlier, one of my notes is not as bad as I have been led to believe. It does arrive with a critical booing ringing in your ears. So, you know, it surpassed that very low expectation I had. But it's just like, so I haven't read Donna Tartt's novel, and I will say that it did make me want to read it because it's a very intriguing story, and that sustained my interest throughout what is a very long film. And another one of my notes read, I will be happy when this film ends, because you really feel its runtime. I would say it comes into its own in the third act, but it's too little, too late. There are some really beautiful lines in it, but those are clearly just from the novel, and again, it just made me want to read the novel. So I'll say it's kind of a whole lot of nothing, and there's this very insistent score that plays throughout, and it's overly reliant for tone on the compositions of Trevor Gyrakis, which is very sad, melancholic piano and violins just constantly playing throughout. So, you know, you might as well just listen to the soundtrack at home, I would say, to get a sense of the film.
But when you say there are intriguing elements in there, what are those intriguing elements? Are they characters, the performances, or is it the narrative, the setting?
The themes. This character, Theo, he's been bereaved in perhaps the worst and most shocking way as a child. The characters that he meets along the way. So during this explosion, this mysterious man hands him a ring and it's like, go to this address. And he goes to that address and he ends up living for a while with this guy who restores antique furniture. But then his dad comes and like whisks him away to like a very unhappy, booze-ridden, like desperado style home life. And then he meets a friend called Boris. Anyway, there's lots of and then this happened and this happened and this happened, which is like what drags the film out. But like the intriguing elements are the fact that he's got this emblem with him of what he's suffered and what he's lost, and you're like, where is this gonna go? So I think that's what you're waiting for, the payoff of like what's going to become of the Goldfinch, which is a painting that, as the film goes on, you discover has its own mythology, its own sad story around it. So it's like the intertwining of grief on a literal level with like grief as embodied by this painting, and then the misadventures of this child.
Okay, Rogan, that's a lot to take in, really, and sounds like it's quite a heavy novel that's been condensed into a 2.5 hour long film. How long
condensed
is this film?
Condensed feels the wrong word.
Okay, well, Rogan, how did you respond to The Goldfinch?
No, I agree, you definitely feel the runtime. But I also, to the actual theme of The Goldfinch, I found myself forgetting about the painting throughout the movie, because it takes you down all these alleys and you try and get invested in that, and then you're brought back and the painting... The importance of the painting only really comes into play in the last half an hour, I think. Mm. So after 2 hours of me personally kind of forgetting about its importance and being more invested in, you know, this young boy's home life, you know, he's kind of dealing with adults or is meant to be cared for by adults who just don't really want to deal with a child's PTSD, and it leads into kind of a drug addiction because, oh, you can't sleep, just take this, you know, we're not going to talk to you about your grief or about your loss. And I kind of was interested more in that angle, but then it stops... short there, and then it's just cut to him as an adult with a drug problem, and that's it's trying to do a lot and not really achieving any of them.
So Reagan's right to point out it cuts to, it's like it's on dual timelines. You've got him as a kid and then him as an adult, played by Ansel Elgort, and it's almost arbitrary the way it just kind of swings between the child and adult life.
How is Ansel? He's somebody who's been a rising star for a few years now but hasn't quite found that.
How is Ansel? A good question.
He doesn't really have much to do, and he's just very kind of trying to play this, you know, sort of damaged young man. He's just a bit emotionally constipated. I just don't get much. Child actors can be a bit hit or miss, but I thought the kid Theo, I thought he was quite good, especially in scenes with his father.
Oakley Fergus, I think his name is.
Yeah. The kid was really good.
Because Luke Wilson plays this caricature of an irresponsible dad who has nefarious reasons for taking him in, the kid.
Sarah Paulson's entrance as Zandra with an X was quite brilliant, I thought. I'm not sure if it was meant to be as funny as it was.
I think she knew it was funny. One point in this long story that I missed out is that in between the living with the antique dealer and being taken away by Luke Wilson, he's adopted by this very wealthy Upper East Side family, the Barbers. And this is a family where Nicole Kidman is a matriarch. Nicole Kidman. And Sarah Paulson and Luke Wilson rock up to this pristine environment full of Chippendales and genuine paintings, and she's like chewing gum and like wearing sky high heels, and I think she relishes, she's playing this quite trashy character, and she has fun with it in so much as you can have fun with a very small one-note part.
Yeah, no, I agree. She's funny.
So this film was almost announced dead on arrival as its Toronto premiere, and then made hardly any box office in its release in the States. So it's become exalted as one of these films that you may go to hate watch. Hannah Woodhead wrote a a column on the Little White Lies website about this, where sometimes films are so critically panned that maybe you can go and enjoy them for different reasons than them being particularly good. Do you think that's the case here? Is there some fun in going to see this anyway, despite the bad reviews?
I think if you're going to go and have fun with it, it's going to be on an earnest level, because it doesn't quite hit those beats. Like the film we reviewed on Film Club 2 weeks ago, Showgirls, is a perfect hate watch film because it's got all these moments of like, what the fuck? Sorry, you're going to bleep that. But yeah, the Goldfinch is very earnest and very long. So, I mean, unless you have a very patient form of hatred that you like to bring to the watch, I wouldn't say it's a very good candidate for a hate watch.
No. Would you agree with that, Rebecca?
Yeah, I'd agree. It takes itself too seriously for you to get any real kind of, you know, oh gosh, what are they doing? You kind of think, oh no. Yeah, it's not great.
So best to just move on, maybe.
Or I think if you're having a hard day and you just want to sit in a room and no one's asking you for anything and the screen doesn't demand too much, just sit quietly, but like something's happening on screen, and that's a good film to go to.
Well, Sophie, what scores would you give this in anticipation, enjoyment, in retrospect?
In anticipation, one, as you said, it was pronounced dead on arrival and everyone's been kicking it since. Enjoyment, a perky 2.
Oh.
In retrospect, 2.
Okay, Rogan?
Yeah, I'd say 2, just because I didn't know much about it, hadn't read the novel. And I have a friend who is an avid reader, and she told me she couldn't finish the novel, so then that didn't, you know, bode well for me. I'd say watching it, I kind of flickered between a 2 and a 3 because there were moments where I thought, okay, something's going to happen. And also Finn Wolfhard is in it and his accent's really not great.
Oh, yeah. Boris.
Yeah, but as Boris. I know, it's so long we forgot.
Sorry, what accent is he attempting?
Russian.
Oh, and he's, oh God, dear.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that, you know, moments with him I found quite enjoyable, perhaps for the wrong reasons. And then, in retrospect, to 2.
Okay.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Well, that's The Goldfinch, anyway, in cinemas this week. Up next, though, we have another new release, and that is The Last Tree. Growing up with his foster mother in rural Lincolnshire, Femi's young life seems as idyllic as the landscape. But when he returns to London to live with his birth mother, he begins to struggle with the culture and values of his new environment. And as the years pass, he must decide which path to adulthood he wants to take and discover what it means to be a young black man in London during the early 2000s.
You missed my class today. Again.
Not on you today, sir.
I'm not on you either. You come in here stinking a weed. Got specks of blood all down, yeah? I told your mum you wouldn't fail, not on my watch.
That's where you f***ed up. Well, what do you want from me?
Always a tough guy. Your mum told me about your foster care. You know, I can't imagine what that must have been
like. Not your business.
Confusion.
Yeah, and what? Don't know shit about it. Stop right there.
Oh.
Yes, a clip there from The Last Tree, the new film from an up-and-coming British director, Shola Amu. So, Rogan, how do we start with The Last Tree? It's been billed by some reviewers as the British Moonlight, that Shola Amu is the British Barry Jenkins. Is that the right way to think of this film, or is that a bit cheap?
I can see why people are saying that. I feel like the references to Moonlight are quite heavy and direct, and I feel like I really enjoyed The Last Tree. This feels a little bit like a patchwork of references, almost, as you're watching it, which, as you're watching, can be quite nice, because you think, oh, that's reminiscent of this or this. But then I'm not sure how that works altogether, just as a film standing on its own.
Yeah.
In a way, yeah.
Sophie, did the patchwork work for you?
It did, and it I think it's a coming-of-age story, and it's one that it will go into cliché territory, but then it will come out of it. I really liked the way the film ended as well, because I was like, what is going to happen to this character who is trying to go his own way, trying to... His life in Lincolnshire, he has a very caring, loving foster mum, and then when his real mum comes and takes him to London, she, it turns out, is quite a tyrant. And then at school, you know, he's like he gets kind of embroiled with a local gang leader, and so he's just trying to go his own way, trying not to ruin his life before it's even started, which is a story that we've seen before. And I was like, where is this going to end? How is this going to end? And for me, like, the success of the film rested on, like, is this going to be a surprising ending? And actually, for me, it was.
Mm-hmm. But it's not spoilers to say that there is this tripartite structure, perhaps not equally weighted, but you start with a young version of the character in Lincoln running wild in the landscape with his young lad mates, then a tricky teenage life in London trying to adjust to that climate, and then this end point where he goes to Nigeria, which is almost like an epilogue.
It's kind of a coda, isn't it?
Yeah, but it does reach for some meaning there. For me, the part of the three that resonated so strongly and was completely surprising, you go into this film and you see some of the themes that are being sketched out, some of the comparisons that are mentioned in the marketing copy, and almost none of them mention that this is actually a period coming-of-age movie set in 2000 and something, the early 2000s, which, full disclosure, is when I was a teenager. And there's a sequence where he rocks up to his high school in inner city London, South London, listening to The Cure, which, I don't know, I didn't expect to feel seen by a film so strongly as that. There are so few, and this is something that's a bugbear of mine, maybe listeners can enlighten us, there are so few coming-of-age films set in that little nook. Once you're past the 90s, but not quite up to the modern day, I think Lady Bird is one of the only few that shoots for that territory. But that's quite welcome in this film.
Was little Michael Leader rocking up to school listening to The Cure?
And being asked what I was listening to, and I didn't have to pass it off as Tupac or anything, but as he does in the film.
Yeah.
But this film only has three soundtrack cues. They're two Cure songs and one New Order song. Come on, that is straight in my comfort zone. Rogan, what were you responding to with this film? Were some parts working for you more than others?
Yeah, for sure. I think it was nice watching it because I feel like I recognised where some of the shooting locations, and I was going, oh, that's definitely there, you know, and that was quite nice. And I feel like you don't necessarily, a lot of British film is set in manor houses, and it was just nice. It was really nice to see. I think I responded to the performances as well quite strongly. Sam Adewunmi, who plays Femi, or older teenage Femi, I think he's really great. He has a really great expressive face, I thought, as well as the actress who plays his mum, his birth mother, Femi Sola. She was really terrifying, and then she could also be really heartbreaking, and I was very moved by both their performances.
Yeah, how do you characterise that relationship with the mother? Because it's often, in the sort of social drama genre, it would be the reuniting with the birth mother would be seen as a relief, whereas in this one it's much more complicated than that, right, in this story.
Yeah, well, she has very heavy expectations on what initially is just a very young boy. Yeah. She expects him to do a lot domestically and will come down like a ton of bricks on him if he doesn't do it. So she's a disciplinarian type of mother. And again, like, I guess a link between this and The Goldfinch is that she's not really interested in his sense of dislocation at having been yanked out of his home in Lincolnshire with this woman who he sees as a mother. So it's like, again, an example of an adult not really taking an interest in the emotional well-being of a child. And she just uses him as a, like, little slave. But then, as Rogan says, there are moments when you can actually see that she does have some other motives as well. But she's just very misguided in the way that she approaches those motives.
Yeah. Anything that we've not caught on this film before we go to scores? Or?
I just wanted to underline a couple of points. So, yeah, like, I think a lot of the time London on film, it's either a really, like, tourist Woody Allen view of London, of, like, here's Big Ben, here's Buckingham Palace. And this is great for just, like, inner city London. Mm-hmm. And it has the ring of, like, Sholeh Amoot. He knows these streets. He knows this estate. You can relax into that depiction and enjoy it. So, and also just to add that I also agree that Sam Adewunmi's performance is incredible. Like, he's got clout within his social group because he has, you know, he's built, he's good looking, he's got a gravitas and a kind of macho energy, but it's understated, and you can see that he's, like, he doesn't just want to trade off of that. You can see this intelligence, this inner intelligence, desperately trying to apply itself to a way out, really. And you can feel the stake, like the stakes are him, like what is going to become of his life. He makes you feel those stakes through his performance.
Could I just add something that I think we would kind of do the film a disservice, especially in what Sholeh Amu is trying to explore, because this is part biographical, is the fact that his foster mother in Lincolnshire was white. And that definitely is a tension in the film, especially when you talk about his, just in terms of culture and his musical interests and the girl he likes at school, a young black girl, and she has blue braids and she also listens to The Cure, and his friends pick on her for many different reasons, her interests, as well as the fact that she's darker skinned than they are, even though they're all black. And he kind of sticks up for her, but a little bit too late, and she gives him what for it, which I found really interesting. In a Q&A with the director, he said the young actress Ruth actually said to him, no, this is how she should react. She shouldn't, because I think initially, or I assume initially, it was written that she would be more forgiving. And I think when I said it was a patchwork earlier, visually, I think also in terms of themes and what he's trying to present to us in terms of intra-community issues as well as his own personal things. So that's why it worked for me, and it also didn't. I think it's really an ambitious film in terms of what it's presenting, but and I admire it for that, for sure. Yeah, scores.
Yeah, so what scores would you give this?
I'd say in anticipation, probably a 3, just like a kind of neutral, like, you know, it's a new film, it'd be nice to see it. And then enjoyment, I think 4, and then in retrospect, I think I'd give it a 3.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sophie?
Oh yeah, identical. 3, 4, 3. But I just want to add to my 4. The 4 is because of the ending, and I think what the ending does, because, you know, like Rogan says, it's like these different cultural influences on this character, and I think it, the ending is a statement about those cultural influences and about what this character needs from the world in order to feel at one within it. That's why I was really quite touched by the ending. But then 3, just because I didn't really think about it that much more afterwards.
Yeah, I think for me it's 3, 3, 3 straight down the line. That's not to say this isn't an impressive film, and I think Sholeh Amu has bags of talent here. I can't wait to see what he does next and down the line. But there are some fantastic elements within it, as I've already said, and the way that it shoots Elephants and Castle, which is an era I lived in for close to a decade. Same with me, Rogan. I was spotting little corner shops and so on that they were running out of. That's quite delightful. I haven't seen London shot like this before. But then there were many elements that were quite familiar, perhaps, or this film just trying to do a little bit too much, which isn't a bad thing. Maybe go and see it and make up your own mind then, listeners. That was The Last Tree, rounding off this week's new releases. Up next, we're off to Film Club for Jonathan Glazer's Birth.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Director Jonathan Glazer followed Sexy Beast with this curious drama set in a wintry New York. Nicole Kidman stars as Anna, a young widow who is on the verge of a new life when a solemn little boy appears, claiming to be the reincarnation of her dead husband. Greeted with boos at its world premiere at the Venice Film Festival, Birth was a divisive disappointment on release, but in the years since, its reputation has grown. Let's hear a clip.
You know that I loved Sean. You know so much. It's taken me this long, and I can't get him out of my system. I can't. Too many memories. I understand that this is gonna sound crazy. I've met somebody who seems to be Sean.
Am I to understand that 10-year-old boy told you he was your late husband, Sean?
He said, it's me, Sean. What am I supposed to think?
He's back.
What do you want?
You'll be making a big mistake if you marry Joseph.
There's a boy this tall who wants to marry my fiancé.
Yes, a clip from Birth there. A very peculiar film, but I think quite a good one. But let's see what the listeners have to say. We have a very chunky email here from Angus from Melbourne, who says, "Hey there, Michael and co. Thanks for the recommendation for Film Club this week. I had no idea that Birth was the third of only three Glazer feature films in existence, having already seen Under the Skin and Sexy Beast. Whilst it was probably my least favourite of Glazer's three features, the apparently awful critical reception upon release seems cruel, all things considered. High points included the film's immersive gothic aesthetic with a very ambiguous New York in winter that struck me as reminiscent of The Devil's Advocate. I thought that Alexandre Desplat's score was wholly absorbing, its staccatoed moments of orchestral flourish providing a great counterpart to Harris Savidis's tense and elegant cinematography. As an aside, a YouTube deep dive into Jonathan Glazer's music videography is an hour well spent, some absolute gems in there and plenty of 90s nostalgia. Best, Angus." Angus, thank you for that. There's plenty to go on there. But also we had some quick fire responses from Twitter. We had Stephen Volk saying, "A brilliant, complex and subtly effective psychological drama, but unsuccessful on release as most of the Great Unwashed don't like their supernatural stories disabused."
Stephen has some issues with the Great Unwashed,
it would
seem.
They need a good washing, maybe. Alec Price says, "One of the best films ever made about the paralysis of grief, the finest performance of Nicole Kidman's career." We have Hope saying, "One of my favourite Kidman performances, Cold as Ice." Jane saying, "I loved this weird, cold movie." And lots of good comments here about Alexandre Desplat's score, about Nicole Kidman's performance. All sorts of positivity here to go on. Rogan, this was the first watch for you, right?
It was.
What did you make of it?
I really liked it. I mean, it's very strange. it's very strange, but really enjoyable. I thought Nicole Kidman was incredible. Mm-hmm. I'm a fan of hers anyway, but it was so nice to fill in this gap because I thought her performance was wonderful and so sad. And although there are moments where I definitely felt very creeped out, mm-hmm. I also, by the end of it, I was completely just so sad for her. Yeah.
It is, on a genre level, so fascinating because mm-hmm. it has this premise. In fact, Wheel of Cinema said it was one of the most inherently disturbing film premises ever conceived, tweeting it at us. It's not quite a ghost story. It feels like it could be. Jonathan Glazer says they wanted to play it like a fairy tale, but it seems very grounded. Sophie, you're narrowing your eyes at me here. What do you think of Birth?
I'm narrowing my eyes like a cat narrows its eyes. Seductively.
Oh, thank you. Okay.
Yeah. Well, Birth. So, yeah, I first saw it. Harris Savidis died some years ago, and there was a tribute double bill to his work of Birth and The Game. Yeah.
Was that from one of his own prints that you were watching it? Yeah. Like a nitrate print or something?
Yeah. Oh, it's beautiful. It's famous for its opening sequence of this guy running through Central Park, which is. It's so beautiful. He's just centre of the frame, and it's just this dolly shot following him as he gliding behind him as this black-clad figure runs through the white snow. It's so beautiful, and there are so many shots like that within the film. Another famous shot is Nicole Kidman having just met this boy who says mm-hmm. he's her dead husband. She then goes to see a classical music performance, and the camera is just on her face as she cries at the music and at what's happening in her life, and is indelible. And it is just a very moving film. It's about people, it's about magical thinking, like the extent that you will go to believe something that would comfort you But then having that comfort snatched away and having to go on living is very, very sad and moving and frankly relatable film, you know? Like, I know grief and I consider myself a rational person. I was raised an atheist and the things I'll believe sometimes is so it's a beautiful film on that score and it's a beautiful film on a visual level. And it's also has moments of being extremely funny. The way that like Lauren Bacall is in it as Anna's mother. Mm. And it's like, so this boy shows up at their apartment and says, "Hi, I'm your dead husband in this 10-year-old boy's body." And the humour of the film comes from the fact that no one overreacts. Everyone's just quite deadpan about it. And they even have some yucks, some lows. They're like, "Ah, this is great. Yeah, sure you are." But then it also walks that line between mocking the ridiculousness of the idea and also entertaining it, which is a clever tone to conjure up.
Mm-hmm. It's a film that for me almost sits in a similar space to Eyes Wide Shut, where there's a strong tension all the way through and it all hinges on a single line delivery. There's a punchline at the end of Eyes Wide Shut that Nicole Kidman delivers. Mm-hmm. And there's one here where I'm paraphrasing, where she is sitting on the edge of the bath with young Sean and she says, "Well, you certainly had me fooled. I thought you were my dead husband," which the entire air of the film just dissipates there and you don't know whether to laugh or cry because you know how deeply she really wanted that to happen. She's wiping away the tears and buttoning herself back up to go back to her, the life that she's tried to piece together for herself.
Yeah, exactly. It's amazing. That performance by the boy is amazing. The film would not work without
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
He makes you believe that he's her dead husband because he's so serious. How did they find such a serious little boy?
It's true. No, I believed, like, I was, there's a twist at the end and I was with it all the way through. I was like, gosh, what is she going to do? She can't run away with this child, you know? I was very invested.
Yeah. Had you seen other Jonathan Glazer films before this?
No.
He's so fascinating because he's made only 3 films in 20 years and they're all so different. And, of course, maybe it's the slight failure of Birth, maybe resulted in the fact that there was a decade between the second and third features and the third being Under the Skin, but he is one of our best filmmakers working today.
And he, so The Goldfinch is an unsuccessful adaptation of a book and there are many unsuccessful adaptations of a book. One extraordinarily successful adaptation is his Under the Skin, and the reason why it's so good is that it doesn't make the rookie error of like, I've got to adapt literally every element of it. It gazes into the book's soul and then it totally reconfigures what it is on a narrative level. And as a huge fan of the book Under the Skin by Michelle Faber, I was an even huger fan of the film. And if you want to see an adaptation done right, watch Under the Skin.
Mm-hmm. And there's a really fascinating production history article, I think it was on Screen International, probably still online somewhere, about Under the Skin, which took 10 years to pull together for budgetary reasons, cast reasons. And it was one of those films where it was a fuller, bigger budgeted production, but they lost a lead cast member and just cut the script in half and made it up in other ways. So therefore it's become this fascinating half adaptation, half its own beast, its own sexy beast, perhaps. Oh God, I'm so sorry.
No, don't be... A, don't be sorry. B, don't pretend that you're sorry when you know you're not. You're just pleased with yourself for making puns.
It's radio, they can't tell how much I'm smiling right now. But would we recommend any other Nicole Kidman films? She's become, over the last 25 years, just one of the best in her field, right? And luckily now, with the TV work she's doing, she's rightly known for that. Are you a fan, Rogan?
Yeah, I love Nicole Kidman.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I haven't seen it in a while, but I wrote it down a few weeks ago. Like, I need to rewatch this. I think To Die For?
To Die For, yeah.
I think that's one I'd recommend. I think it's a bit more obscure.
She has an interesting sideline in films in which she has in a borderline inappropriate relationships with younger men.
Yeah.
The other one being this Rabbit Hole. And then
The Paperboy, she...
Yeah.
And urinates on Zac Efron.
Perhaps The Killing of a Sacred Deer as well, if Barry Keoghan has any scenes with
her. So you mentioned Eyes Wide Shut. That gives more screen time to Tom Cruise, but she has that payoff line, as you say, Michael, mm-hmm. right at the end. I feel like she's the best thing in everything she's in. When she's given support roles in films, those are the ones I would say to avoid. But any film where she has a star billing, is by default incredible and worth watching.
Yeah. We should say that this film, while it wasn't successful on release, Birth has had some acclaim over the years and has had some impact. That shot you talk about, the 2-minute unbroken slow zoom shot into Nicole Kidman as you see that new information slowly work its way through her brain and you see her sorts of falling apart in front of the camera, that has become almost a cheap, hackneyed cliche shot now that's used in many other films. Yeah. Two very recent examples, Call Me By Your Name, the final shot in that. The Portrait of Lady on Fire
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, it ends on a shot like that.
And they're always so effective, aren't they, when they're used, especially with the right piece of music, the right actress.
Yes, Adele Hanel, thank you.
Anyway, that was Birth. Listeners, if you watch that film or any of the other films we talked about this week, let us know what you think at the usual channels, at Truth and Movies on Twitter, truthandmovies@tcolondon.com via email, and then there's also the comments section at lwlies.com/podcast. Next week, we have a satisfyingly alliterative double bill of new releases with Joker and Judy. And for Film Club, because of Judy Garland, we're going to go back to 1954 for her version of A Star Is Born. Let us know what you think of that film if you've watched it. Rogan, Sophie, thank you so much for joining me this week and bringing your opinions and insight. I'm Michael Leader, and as always, this has been a 7 Digital production.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.